Good evening. This is Paul Kelly, and you are getting ready to listen to Speak Up Arkansas. This is a live broadcast. We would like to include you in our discussion. You can give us a call here at 501-433-0088, or you can go online and send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. Welcome to Speak Up Arkansas, and today we've got what I like to call some advocates, social justice advocates, and certainly community activists around the table to talk about issues that are happening on the state, national, and local level, and we want to encourage you to join the discussion. So, in the studio with me right now is Steve Copley, who is chair of Faith Voices Arkansas. He's a Methodist minister and well known in the community and in the state for his advocacy on many things, from getting the minimum wage passed to a long list of things. He'll talk about the Faith Voices of Arkansas. And then also we have in the studio right now is Jim Lynch. Jim Lynch is a longtime friend, and we've been in many meetings and protests and everything else, and he was has been known a lot across Little Rock because of his activism, including probably being a founding member of the Little Rock Neighborhood Association. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
And Steve, thank you for being here.
You bet. Thank you, Paul.
We're expecting Ryan Davis to come in, but he hadn't showed up yet. But I'm sure when he gets here, he'll have something to say. He always does, and usually worth listening to. So, Steve, why don't you start off? I know I have in front of me your Faith Voices report. For the latest one, I guess it was October 10th, or no, it says 9th. Talk to us about Faith Voices and what they do, and then talk a little bit about some of the things that are on their agenda and things that they are following.
Sure, Paul. Thank you. We were originally founded in the mid-90s as the Arkansas Interfaith Alliance. And at that time, that was Rabbi Gene Levy and Reverend Ed Matthews, and it was part of the National Interfaith Alliance. And then it sort of went dormant in the late 90s, and then in 2004, we were looking for a way for the faith community to have a vehicle to do progressive advocacy. So we reformed the Arkansas Interfaith Alliance, and then about a year ago we changed the name because Arkansas Interfaith Alliance is confusing with Interfaith Arkansas and Interfaith Power and Light, and actually Faith Voices Arkansas is more reflective of what we are. We're a faith voice to advocate at the state and federal level on issues that are of importance. So that's a bit about who we are, and we have about a 17-18 member board from around the state of Arkansas, and we work on, as I said, issues of state and federal, on things like religious freedom, economic justice, civil and human rights, restorative justice, international issues, education, and seems like I'm missing one. Health.
Environment.
Yeah. Thank you. There are about 8 issues. Some of the big issues right now we're concerned about in the civil rights area is certainly around immigration, and one of the big issues right now that's central and will be for 4 or 5 months is the whole DACA, the deferred arrival, deferred action for children's arrival. Also, a deep concern, Arkansas on the 9th of November is about to execute another individual, and I also chair the board of the Arkansas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, and there really are some issues about his mental capacity, right. So we have some concerns about that. Concerns around what is religious freedom and how that's being currently defined at the federal level or redefined. And lots of environmental issues and concerned about CHIP and its reauthorization.
Our Kids First.
Yeah, right? That would be it in Arkansas. So that's just a flavor, and I'm happy to go into more detail on any of those, but those are some of the major ones. We do a issue piece every week, or we try to do it every week. So that gives updates on the issues that we consider priorities.
Well, could I ask Steve a question?
Sure. About this is a go-around.
I don't keep up with it as much as Steve and probably some folks in the Faith Voices group does, but I'm reading now more about, of course, religious freedom is one of the pillars of our country. It's part of the First Amendment, as the courts have ruled over decades and centuries. But this now notion of redefining religious freedom, I'm getting a little confused. I'm now aware, and I just read this yesterday, and I went, wow, this is really something. Apparently, the state of, first of all, the Supreme Court has ruled that gay marriage is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can marry who you love. But the state of Mississippi has passed a law that says that marriage is only between a man and a woman. And it's got some other things in it, but they are serious about this. And this is going in front of the Supreme Court, apparently, in the next 6 weeks or something, to where this can stand. I have my thoughts and belief systems about why I'm here, my purpose in life, if there's a greater power, religion, if you will, and so forth. But what is this notion of redefining religious freedom? It seems to me that we can have religious freedom, but if someone else is offended by my religious thoughts, they are now arguing for their rights. Is that right? Where is this headed? I've done a poor job of setting up the problem, but it's almost like if I'm offended by your religion, I can stop you from exercising yours.
There's a flavor to this whole debate that's there. It's a sense that in our culture we are, that the argument on the side that pushes back against our traditional understanding of separation of church and state, or now I would argue just separation of religion and state, argue, well, you know, Christianity has been the traditional underpinning of the culture. And this is their argument, that therefore Christian values should be upheld exclusively, not what are the shared values that if you're Jewish or Muslim or Hindu
or Buddhist
or you part of the other traditions. And a certain flavor of Christianity that says, we are concerned about X, Y, and Z, and then we see within that the whole LGBT issue, and that's where the issue of, well, if I'm asked, and that's a case that's sitting before the Supreme Court now, if I am asked as a baker who...
To bake the cake for a lesbian wedding?
Right. So the underpinning of it is it's... And I struggle with it. Not everybody does, because I think, you know, in our culture, literally, the bright line was so that no particular faith community established the religion of the nation, and that's where it's really being pushed, with some argument that being made that in the early days of the colonies there wasn't anything about establishment or separation of church and state, that each colony could determine which faith they wanted to follow. And so now they're coming back on that angle and saying, you know, there's this whole idea of separation was just a construct that Jefferson had and some other folks had, but the original founders did not have. And so that's where part of this, it's, you know, it's not a redefining, but in a way it is. It's what we see throughout the history of our country as the Supreme Court in our country wrestle, but there's a really strong push that worries me, and I think some of that's because we see folks who are of different traditions. You look in Arkansas, growth of the Muslim community and Buddhist community and Hindu community, and so folks start pushing on that, and I think a lot of that's out of fear.
Right. Ryan Davis has joined us. Ryan, you want to comment to this? I know you got Reverend in front of your name sometimes, so go ahead.
Every Sunday. Jim, Steve, Paul, how y'all doing? And you know, I guess the biggest boogeyman in any of these arguments is the Pandora's box argument. And, you know, I think about places like Dearborn, Michigan, that has an overwhelming majority of Muslim citizens. And so, you know, what are the implications there, especially since these self-same people are, you know, one of their biggest boogeymen is so-called Sharia law that they see. And so, you know, how does that, what does that mean there in Dearborn? And I'm always amazed at the idea that America has this these great Christian underpinnings, because there's not even agreement among denominations in the city of Little Rock, let alone, you know, across the entire, you know, from sea to sea. So, I mean, whose version of Christianity holds primacy when we're talking about laws and things like that? And then, of course, we know that there was religious opposition to, and still in perhaps some corners, religious opposition to interracial marriage. And so who's to say a baker could not say, well, I am against marrying an Asian man and a Hispanic woman, you know, because I'm against, because God didn't ordain interracial marriages. And I just really hope that some more sensible of our conservative political friends would find some bravery at some point and really talk about how ridiculous this is. I mean, we need pushback from all corners, because, you know, I think these folks kind of feel justified in going this route.
And one other thing, Jim, so I could jump in, is tied in with that is this. In the 50s, we call it the Johnson Amendment, that basically said any nonprofit could not endorse a candidate, can do advocacy work all they want. It's now beginning to be played out. You know, the current administration early in the year at the National Prayer Breakfast said they were going to just get rid of the Johnson Amendment and pass legislation that would allow faith communities to endorse candidates openly from their pulpits.
Well, that implies the preacher calling a revival meeting on, you know, Thursday or Friday, and, you know, getting his 400 flocks there under the tent and whipping up. Not only does he have the word as he sees it, that's fine, but now he's going to add and vote for candidate Smith. And, oh, by the way, the buses are lined up out on the street corner, and we're going to vote when I finish speaking.
That's right. And even more than that, we've seen through, you know, through the years, the increase of C4s and other groups where money funnels in. Well, churches become
political
organizations. So that's where they're pushing. It's rather scary, because I don't believe in any form or fashion that in the pulpit that's where we endorse candidates. Yes, just living wage. Yes, we care for the environment. Now, folks, and leave folks to, at least in my understanding, leave them to from the pulpit connect. Now, if people ask me, I would certainly tell them who I supported, but that's different than actually from my point of view doing in the pulpit.
Well, those who are now wanting to wipe out this distinction of churches and the Johnson Amendment not being, or the Johnson Amendment in effect specifying that churches should not politically endorse, that was in effect a trade for them having a tax exemption. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
So are these same folks saying, we want to be able to endorse, and oh, by the way, we'll give up our tax exemption, paying taxes on the collection plate?
Absolutely not.
We want to endorse, and we want the tax exemption. Right. That's where they're heading.
So they want it both ways.
Yeah. Well, I want freedom from religion myself in one side. Of course, I think that's both sides of that because, I mean, that's really what I think, interpret the history of the United States. We fled from, you know, someone who wanted to practice their religion on us, and the Quakers and the other folks couldn't do it. So, and that's what they have in Iran, isn't it? Isn't that what they have in all these countries that we're at war with, is a theocracy?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I guess we would have a lot of company, but those seem to be the people we don't really strive to be. So,
well, my reading of, I mean, I would be stand corrected by anyone here in the studio or listening at home, but my understanding of colonial history in the United States was that the early leaders of Washington and the other revolutionaries, I mean, there was people of all kinds of faith. They coalesced around the notion that they wanted to be free of British rule. But there was all sorts of people, and even as the government was formed, the Constitution was adopted, there was, notwithstanding what Jefferson, Madison, and other people wanted in terms of explicit individual rights as embodied in the First Amendment, but there was a multiplicity of religious viewpoints in this country, and they were all respected.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, this is a topic that I think is really important, and we've had a show about religion and their role in government. And and listeners, if you got an opinion, a thought on this, we'd love to hear from you. And we just got started, and as you can tell, we've got folks around the table who are opinionated, so you can give us a call here at 501-433-0088. Anybody want to wrap this up and move on to perhaps another subject? Or got any?
Well, not. I think around the. I know we've got two other gentlemen here who have bona fide religious credentials. I do not, but I actually read an article in this last week where it's not only the Johnson Amendment, but this whole notion of tax reform. Preachers, typically from a church, get a housing allowance that's embodied in their salary. But when it comes down to the end of the year and the preacher fills out his tax return to the federal government, his housing allowance is not taxed. And is that getting ready to evaporate?
Well, one court has ruled, it was in Wisconsin, one of the federal district courts ruled that it was
unconstitutional. You can't treat its income. And
now, we'll see where that in goes as it moves into the, if it moves into the Supreme Court level.
Right. Interesting, interesting times we live in.
Right. All right. Again, you can give us a call, 501-433-0088, or send an email to speakupar@gmail.com. Anything else, Steve, on your course? I'm looking at the one of the things that amazes me is all this noise that's going on the national level, and how behind the scenes the Congress can't seem to agree, but there are all kinds of administrative maneuvers to undo the Clean Power Plant, and then the undoing of those protections against another financial problem, the Dodd Amendment, and all the things that went along with that to protect consumers. How that Dodd-Frank amendments, but I guess there's a lot we could talk about there. But
if I may, Paul, on that last one on consumer finance protection, some bright spot, the Consumer Finance Protection Board, which is now been an agency now for the last several years. Payday loans, which is something I know you're interested in, they issued a rule some time ago. The commentary has come in and so forth, and now it's ready to be made effective. But the maximum consumer loan is going to be $500, which is a real reform, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it would limit the amount of the payday loan that's possible. But the problem is also that I don't know if it'd eliminate the problem of them being able to renew it every couple of weeks or so.
There's also a time limit on that. It can't be renewed for more than maybe 18 months or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I remember reading that. That is a good thing. But there is something called the Wall Street Re-